Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I want to know more about the black market tiger business. That's really what I'm getting at here. I don't even know what this segment is. I just found this story to be incredibly entertaining.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
This has to win a Pulitzer, right? I mean, look at this. This is amazing. Just a mountain of beer in the back. It looks like a landslide of beer.
And SI's Pat Forte.
Let's treat them as legitimate competitors and cover the sport as a sport, as opposed to covering it in a paternalistic, patronizing, we can only say good things about people all the time sort of way.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Hi, welcome to the pod. UConn Huskies national champs. Adama Sanogo, saying his first name right?
You did.
I did. 17, Jordan Hawkins, 16, defense. San Diego State went 11 minutes in the first half, couldn't score, couldn't get a basket at least. Huskies national champs, fifth national championship in the last 24 seasons since 1999. Five titles. The only program in college basketball history to win that many in that brief of a time, UCLA, of course. Pat, you were there courtside. I was not surprised by this. I had limited interest in this game because I was like, UConn's going to win. They annihilated this entire tournament. They won by 24, 15, 23, 28, 13, and 17. I don't recall anyone winning a national championship without a nervous moment in March Madness. I mean, what, the closest was what? Like when they got it to like six or eight last night and like kind of in the second half and Jim Nance was getting really excited that he might have something to talk about in his last game. Fill us in on the month-long ass-kicking that UConn delivered.
It was one of the great tournament runs we've ever seen. Incredible display of everything. Offense, defense, depth, power, shooting, you know, skill. They did everything and they did it well. And it was super impressive to see in person up close, just to watch them just mow down people here at the Final Four. And I will say, you said without a nervous moment, and that's almost true. Believe it or not, their most nervous moment was the first half, probably halftime of the first game against Iona. First round. They were behind by two. They had lost in the first round each of the previous two seasons. And Hurley said, he said that he and his fellow coaches had talked about it, that the most pressure they will ever face would be the first game. And then they drew Pitino, and he said, we were like, he said, as he called it, it was hysteria. And he said, we couldn't go out like suckers again. Like Danny Hurley's one of the great talkers of all time, a Jersey City wise guy dude. And he's just going through all this. But after that, second half of that game, they blew him out, and then they blew out everyone's thereafter. San Diego State did what they did. They, you know, they were they what they were. They tried. They found ways to scrap back within five in the second half last night, and at least, you know, gave their fans some hope and everything. And, I mean, you know, phenomenal season from them, phenomenal effort this tournament, phenomenal weekend for them in Houston. But this was all about UConn and just how good that this team is and how good the program is. You alluded to that, Dan. I mean, this is a blue blood program. This is now five titles, five and a quarter century. In the last 25 years, nobody else has won more than three, and they've won five. So hats off to the Huskies.
And three different coaches, right?
Three different coaches. Yes.
Unbelievable. Yeah. It's like LSU football or something.
Great. So Calhoun is the Nick Saban.
Yep.
Kevin Ollie.
Is Ed Orgeron. That kind of fits.
Yeah. I guess.
Although I guess he's less sorry. Miles and
sorry, know. Kevin. I'm sorry. Like Kevin's like a really smart, like
oh yeah, no,
guy.
Yeah. No, yeah, no. Yeah.
He's gonna be like, what the?
But also his Kevin. Title was
Kevin.
Was a bit of a, you know, like Helen a one-year comet, you know.
He was. They won that title by hitting free throws. I swear to God, they had the two guys, Napier. I mean, they just hit all their free throws. Yeah. And then they come back and Danny Hurley, and I just think they're positioned extraordinarily well. I had a guy tell me the other day, like Danny's dad, Bob Senior, is a legendary coach at St. Anthony's High School in Jersey City, had a million players come through there, and hard nosed coach. He was a parole officer. His day job was parole officers.
Yeah.
it's like something out of the movies, right?
Right.
But Bob Senior is incredible. Obviously, his son and his brother, Bob Jr., they played up the Hurley family enough in this tournament, as well they should. But someone just said, this is St. Anthony's at the college level. Just athletes, hard-nosed, defense, just like, oh, God, I can't believe we have to play these guys. We'll see. Sometimes you just win one. But, man, UConn is set up with a great young coach, a basketball league, a school that cares more about basketball than anything else. And, I'll put it this way. I would be surprised if this is the only national title that Danny Hurley wins.
Absolutely. Yes. As Kemba Walker said when he was on the court yesterday after the game, wearing this gigantic UConn Husky necklace with, 37 diamonds and rubies and stuff.
Hell yeah.
In it. He said Calhoun started it, Hurley ended it, but it's not ending. It's just going to keep going from here. And I totally agree with him. Danny Hurley's 50 years old. He's just getting going. And they are absolutely primed and positioned to be maybe the dominant program in college basketball for the foreseeable future.
Also, congrats on winning a basketball title so quickly after their legendary 2020 football season which was crowned by the
New York Times national champions.
Crowned by the New York Times as the national champions for not and playing Randy Issel a game.
Spent the whole season in Florida. Jim Moore took over, I think, and his staff, and they were like, what is wrong with this team? And the players were like, well, we've only seen our coach for like 2 months of the last 24. They're like, what?
UConn took COVID very seriously. They couldn't get any games. That was the problem. I think UMass, you're an independent. I think UMass played like two games, right? It's tough. But hey, let me tell you about the Minutemen. We kept going. We should have quit and won the national title.
Yeah, see? If you had quit harder, you would have won the title.
In one of the most hysterical moments in sports writing history, the New York Times granted UConn the national title for not playing a game in 2020. In 2020, so that COVID would not further spread. rare team that's won it both in basketball. I mean, really, at the office, what were they doing at the office that day? Did they bat it around? Like,
that was
come
pretty
on,
bad.
Yeah, let's come up bad. With the most preposterous idea ever.
Yeah, let's crown them. But you look back and in history, and people are like Alabama's got 40 national titles because they claim the Mobile Press Register named us the champs and hit 43 and something like that. So I think you can claim it. I mean, this is the New York Times. It's not just any little paper. This is a real, real thing. Pat, you wrote earlier this year, this month, though, I thought it was very good about the 10-year anniversary of the Big East saying we're done with football. And since then, they've won three national titles. Now, UConn was a wayward child, a prodigal son, but they came back and look at what they're doing. We've talked on this podcast, honestly, they should have football conference and then basketball conferences and then field hockey, hockey conferences. Like, why are we doing this? But Val Ackerman must've been pretty happy last night. Like what did it, just your thoughts on that, just how important it is to just be in a league that fits.
Yeah. This is like the, kind of the ultimate triumph for the Big East. It has validated those schools' vision of what they wanted to be. It's like, we nearly just screwed everything up by pretending to be a football conference. Hell, at one point in time, San Diego State was in the Big East. San Diego That's State true. In Southern California was in the Big East. They had agreed to join, and they never did because they finally put a halt to the madness, but that's when they were just like desperately grabbing programs from everywhere to try to stay afloat. And that's when they just said, look, forget it. Let's be who we are and what we really want to be. And the Catholic schools banded together. And then, yeah, they very smartly brought back UConn. Villanova kept the thing relevant by winning the titles in 2016 and 2018. But getting back UConn meant so much. First of all, just for overall basketball strength. But secondly, fan base size. They have the biggest fan base in the league. You go to the Garden when UConn is in the tournament, it's a totally different thing than when they're not. And it carries over now to the men's team winning another national championship. Women's team obviously goes had been like every Final Four and since forever until this year. And so masterstroke by the school presidents back in the day. And yes, hiring Val Ackerman as the commissioner to get things restarted, where she didn't even have an office. She was working out of a law office. I mean, they had nothing. They had no money. They had no budget. They made it work. So this is a great moment for Big East fans and for the Big East Conference. And they were really good this year. Danny Hurley said, you know, we were the best conference. That's debatable. But boy, in the end result, they had a huge, huge March and April.
Speaking of the women's tournament, that's where the juice was this year.
Oh, boy. Was it ever.
Ooh. Ooh. Much more interesting. I like it. So LSU wins, obviously. Kim Mulkey comes back and love the outfits.
Oh, boy.
I almost wore the same thing the other day, and I felt glad that
would look good on you.
The pink ruffle one, man. How about the one where it had, instead of the ruffles, it had feathers on the outside?
She is one of the three or four most terrifying people I've ever interviewed.
I would rate the same.
She is right there, and our thoughts are with Bob Knight and his family as he's undergoing some health issues. And, you know, we'll talk a lot about Bob Knight at some point, but we hope everything is okay with them. But she is in the Bob Knight category of, like, you better come. The Bob Knight, Bill Belichick school of, you better get your question right or Kim Mulkey's going to tear you apart. So, first off, Caitlin Clark was phenomenal to watch. The whole tournament was, the Final Four was exceptional, as it often is. It gets really competitive at the end. Women's basketball tournament, a lot of blowouts, but by the time you get to the Final Four, it's often buzzer beaters, the whole thing. And then we have it was just wild this weekend. I mean, you have Dawn Staley, they lose to Iowa. She gets up in her post-game press conference and just basically suggests, I'm not even sure what she was coming up with. She took offense to Iowa's coach saying it was going to be a bar fight to get a rebound. And then there was, she basically is like, well, people are calling our team thugs and monkeys and things like, I don't even want to repeat that because it's like, and I was like, wait, they did, but I couldn't find anybody who actually did that. Like, that would be a scandal. There was this huge thing. Then you have the taunting situation in the title game. Like, there was drama going on. People reacting wildly. People who don't know anything about women's basketball reacting. It was crazy.
Pat, everybody seemed to have opinion.
Everyone had an opinion. I don't know what was
them maybe never watching a women's game this year.
It was a big step forward for women's basketball to have 9.9 million people watching the championship game and then have a bunch of people arguing about it. Yeah. You know, this was not a passive viewership. That's for sure. A couple of things, obviously. First of all, yeah, like, Dawn Staley, I think, was changing the subject a little bit from getting badly outcoached. I mean, she had an undefeated team that was upset by, you know, it was an incredible performance by Caitlin Clark and by Iowa. But that's what I basically took out of that is they didn't help on Caitlin Clark very well. She just drove to the basket. There's nobody there. I thought that they just had a very poor defensive plan and execution. And that was a large just subject change to something else. Mm.
And very vague in pointing to random national media without naming them, without naming the event they were at. It was very interesting. I think there was a lot of administrators around the country that actually buzzed me after that and were pretty critical of Dawn Staley for doing that.
Yeah. I mean, and that, so Here's the thing. If women's college basketball wants to keep progressing and keep growing, two things should probably change. One, the officiating should get better because it's always been terrible and it was really bad in the championship game. But two, people need to not be in the media and not just be blind advocates for the game, but cover it with some critical thought. Some thought, first of all, but also some critical thought. And if Dawn Staley coached a bad game, say Dawn Staley coached a bad game. And then secondly, you know, the huge taunting controversy that came down, like the tendency, I think, with women's sports is to try to patronizingly protect them and treat them like little dainty girls, which they are not. Angel Reese is not a dainty girl. Caitlin Clark is not a dainty girl. So no. They're going to trash talk like they often do in the men's game. You're going to give it and you're going to get it. And that's part of it. And this response of like, oh my gosh, what is this terrible sportsmanship? We can't do this, this poor little girl. No, like she can take it, all right? I guarantee Caitlin Clark can take it. She has dished it out, the same hand in front of the face John Cena thing that was done to her. It was done because she did it to Haley Van Lith from Louisville in the regional final. So
who's the ultimate trash talker?
Yeah. Yes.
Wait, all these people that only tuned in for the final, like, I can't believe this trash talk. Wait, you should have seen Louisville.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Haley Van Lith. Best trash talkers.
Yeah, no, Haley Van Lith was getting it in with the post-game handshake with Texas, you know, a couple of rounds earlier.
She's like the Danny Ainge or like, I don't know what. Like, she's incredible. I love watching her at Louisville. Is she a senior yet? I hope not.
Oh, no. She's just a sophomore. Right?
She's hysterical. She never stops, which is why Clark does it to her. Then people are dragging that up and being like, oh, Clark. See, I think Clark was actually fairly innocent giving it to Haley because, you know, Haley was talking nonstop. Yeah, no, it's just, I don't know what everyone was offended about. The whole thing was just like, better sportsmanship, sure, but that ain't how it works.
We've talked about it before on the show, but like how society in the divisiveness and divide in society that's really never been greater in our lives, I don't think, has seeped into sports. And I think this is a good example of it. You're either on one side or another. You have to pick a side and you have to yell and scream. And I think it was indicative and it was just very silly. It really was. The whole thing was silly. And I'm thankful as we've gotten up on this Tuesday morning to not see a ton of it anymore on social as it was the last couple of days. Maybe it's quieting down a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it was absolute, you know, bonfire of anger and accusation on Monday.
Yeah.
You know, and everywhere. And it's just like, I mean, I guess the women's game say, Dave Portnoy and Keith Olbermann are watching our game. I guess that's good. It would be nice if they knew what the hell they were talking about when they're going to comment on the thing. But still, to have this much heat and energy around women's basketball is great. But again, let's treat them as legitimate competitors and cover the sport as a sport as opposed to covering it in a paternalistic, patronizing, we can only say good things about people all the time sort of way. Cover it like men's game.
Yeah, and Keith Olbermann, what are we doing? 60-year-old man calling a 19-year-old women's basketball player an effing idiot publicly on social media. I'm scratching my head over some of this stuff, man.
Yeah, Keith Olbermann coming off the top rope out of nowhere. Like, I was like, someone's like, Keith Olbermann then, called Angel Reese. I'm like, this sentence is not making computing with me. Like, wait.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought of Keith Olbermann in a while. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
No offense. Did y'all I'm sure see, he hasn't thought of was, me either. But just like, what? What?
I think it was Samuel L. Jackson's response. Samuel L. Jackson responded with, little energy to Keith Olbermann. That's a little energy.
Boy.
I hope I have that right, but I think that's what happened.
To Pat's point, this is great. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Keith Olbermann and Samuel L. Jackson are fighting over a women's basketball game. Like, okay.
Oh, here it is. Thanks for reminding us what Lil D- energy actually is, Keith.
Oh, my.
There you go.
I think if Samuel L. Jackson ripped me on Twitter, I would just, die. I just like give up. Come on, Red. Come on, Red.
Red.
Come on, man. Samuel L. Jackson, you just got to take it. You just got to be like, I'm done. Yeah. I lose. Maybe I'm not fighting with that man.
Pipe that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The more controversy, the better. The one thing that the NFL understands is rip us, rip our players, rip our coaches, rip our owners. Like, whatever, man. Just go ahead. We don't care because we just get more popular the more you're ripping us. And all these other sports that are trying to come up, they just want the cheerleader factor instead of instead of just embracing it and being like, oh, wait. But I agree. I thought Staley's thing I thought was a little ridiculous because, again, I immediately was like, wait, what happened? Someone in the national media said this? They did not. A coach said there was going to be a bar fight going for a rebound, and she spun that thing out of control. So that I'm a big Dawn Staley fan as a coach. She did not carry herself well on that night, either on the sideline or in front of the microphone. But the sportsmanship fight is always comical because you never – just ever criticizing anyone for lack of sportsmanship, it always backfires.
Yeah, right.
It's like cast the first stone on that one. All right, getting to some football. This is a football podcast. Ross, you got an update on this Tennessee infractions case. How quaint. Yeah. Getting back to Jeremy Pruitt. What do we got?
Yeah. It's somewhat of a procedural matter. It's another step in the case, which is going to a contested hearing. So they're in about 2 weeks in Cincinnati, Tennessee, and two of its former coaches, Jeremy Pruitt and Derek Ansley, will go before members of the Committee on Infractions in a three-day hearing over suggested penalties. They could not work out a deal. The three parties in the NCAA could not work out a negotiated resolution like other parties in the case already have. And so now we're on to a hearing, but it's getting pretty contentious, especially with the school in the NCAA. You know, all of these allegations, the entire investigation is centered around Jeremy Pruitt and recruiting misconduct. You might remember over the summer when the somewhat jarring notice of allegations came out of recruiting misconduct in paying players during the COVID dead period, you know, having them on campus and basically paying for everything. And when the school found out about it, they did their own investigation. They basically cleaned house. You know, they got a new athletic director. They fired Pruitt and all those that have alleged to commit this misconduct. And so I think many people expected not for them to get off light necessarily, but for them to, you know, end up resolving this matter with the NCAA. And we're to the point where that is not being done. So you have to imagine that the NCAA is proposing pretty stringent penalties, and Tennessee disagrees with those. So on to a hearing they go.
Yeah, that's an interesting one because, you know, Tennessee did take a lot of action, and there was a lot of thought, myself included, that a lot of that was to find a way to not pay a buyout to Jeremy Pruitt. So they uncovered a lot of this stuff themselves. But I think they were given, you know, the NCAA used the term exemplary cooperation at some point in this, and that may not result in a wrist slap. There may be more to it in terms of penalty structure here. But the violations were pretty brazen. I mean, Jeremy Pruitt, straight cash homie in the fast food bag, right? I mean, they were dropping money in fast food bags and giving it to families and like making car payments and stuff. It was an old school SEC cheat-a-thon going on there.
And the big thing, I think it was during the dead period. You remember it was another one of these COVID dead period recruiting investigations where you weren't supposed to have any in-person contact with kids, specifically, you know, on campus, but certainly not off campus either. And these kids were all visiting, which you can't stop, but they were not just visiting, but they were being courted around the towns by coaches, and they were paying for it all, basically official visits during COVID dead period.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of wiggle room on that. And again, it's like every sport has rules. Like, you know, like you can't, NFL draft, you can't work a guy out in the wrong, like, you know, there's a schedule, right? There's just different things. And so when you're violating those just basic rules of a sport, which really don't have a lot to do with, you know, should the players get paid? Obviously, in this case, there was some alleged monetary transactions also. But yeah, I'm intrigued I feel the NCAA is under enormous pressure to like hammer somebody.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been going well for them. But I you know, you just don't know if they have the credibility left to do it. Although I guess they can. It's just, you know, I think maybe it'll be something worth watching, certainly. Because this is also. Go ahead.
No, this is a good point, Dan. You know, the credibility of the NCAA has been pretty negatively impacted the last several years. You're seeing schools, coaches, administrators be a little more brash. We talked about it on the show before with handling NCAA stuff. I mean, heck, you know, how much did it take for LSU to fire Will Wade? And now he's rehired, despite almost certainly going to receive a show cause. Things like this, right? It seems like schools are not as afraid anymore to deal with the NCAA. And I'm curious to see how Tennessee handles this, because I don't think they're afraid of the NCAA either. And things have gotten pretty heated from what I
understand. So if NCAA just sits there, though, like, I mean, it's a voluntary organization. They mm-hmm. do have rules. Like, if they come and say you're banned from next two postseasons or something, what can Tennessee do?
I guess they could conceivably go some legal route it would be somewhat unprecedented to a Pat. Well, I mean, when's the last time a school or Dan, you know, if you,
I don't know,
if you know,
Tarkadian, maybe.
Tark went to the Supreme Court and it took years.
Yeah. And that was like 30 some years ago.
So. This is their spot. They have no credibility. No one's afraid of them, but they still do have this rule book and apparatus of justice that they conceivably can go hammer people. But I agree. It's like Tennessee doesn't care. You know, Michigan doesn't care.
Yeah.
You know, and I go to the other things that go on in the sport. We talked about, like, in the public's mind, you know, it's obviously a very complicated system of how the NCAA enforces its rules. But if you're the public, you're just looking at basic stuff and you sit there and go, well, man, Alabama let a guy play, you know, and it's like all those things contribute to, like, there's no efforts here to try to do anything that's, I don't know, fits into like some standard. It's just every school for itself. So yeah. I don't know. Maybe they hit them. But I don't know what Tennessee can do, though, other than complain and have everyone scream.
Yeah.
Don't hand out bags of money and fast food. If this stuff's true, this is not a wiggle room. I mean, it's like
this. No. You know? It's brazen institutional cheating, okay?
Yeah.
Is what it is. So, you know, and you're right. I think the NCAA is feeling pressure to hammer somebody. And I think there's a little bit of tension between the Committee on Infractions and Enforcement, which are two separate mm-hmm. bodies. Right. And you go back, I went to that Committee on Infractions, like, you know, quarterly meeting or whatever a couple of months ago, and there was disagreement. Like, the infractions people wanted the Miami penalties to be harder in the booster case, John Ruiz and the Cavender mm-hmm. twins. And they were disappointed that they reached a resolution that didn't include a disassociation of John Ruiz. And so, infractions may want to throw its weight around a little bit more than enforcement is backing at this point. So that kind of brings another dynamic, I think, into play in this.
Crude terms. The enforcement are like the cops, the detectives. And the infraction committee is the judges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Just so people, because again, not easy to get all that out there. NCAA is getting sued, Ross, again.
Yeah, again, yeah. So the NCAA, the same attorneys who won the Alston Supreme Court case against the NCAA, and the same attorneys who are co-counsel to the House hearing, or House case out in California.
And Alston was academic awards, right?
Alston was educationally related benefits. It's cash. It's six.
Right.
You get a minimum or a maximum of right at $5,900 a year for each athlete. That's what the Alston Supreme Court decision allowed NCAA schools to do. So the same lawyers who won that case are filing a new lawsuit, basically for back pay on Alston money. So athletes who could have got Alston before the Supreme Court ruling, they are saying they're owed that money. And they can only go back a certain amount of time. You know, when a lawsuit is filed, you can only go back retroactive 4 years. So the athletes have gotten Alston money the last 2 years. So it's the first 2 years. It's the 2018 and 2019, basically, that they're saying athletes are owed Alston money. And it's against the NCAA, and it's also against the Power Five conferences. I think one of the most interesting things about this are the plaintiffs named in the case, which, you know, Alston was a plaintiff. House is a plaintiff. And this one will probably be the Hubbard lawsuit. Chuba Hubbard, the former Oklahoma State running back, is named as the plaintiff in the case, along with an current Auburn track athlete, Kiera McCarl. So they're named as plaintiffs. And, you know, if you do the math, this comes to at least about $180 million, because they're not only saying these athletes are owed 2 years of Alston money, back Alston money, but guess what? Let's triple the damages because they weren't paid them, and they're having to go through what the attorneys call suffering injuries. So you got to triple all that. So the attorneys that I talked to yesterday say they think this impacts about 5,000 to 10,000 athletes. And so at the minimum, 5,000 times 5,900 times two, because 2 years, and then you triple it. So we're talking about a lot of money, just another legal challenge that the NCAA has to face here.
Kind of disappointed none of my kids were named plaintiffs against the NCAA.
Could you get some money, Pat? You had like 14 kids play college sports.
Could get some money, yeah. During that time, you had at least a couple in college, right?
Yeah. We'll see what we can do to gouge a few nickels out of this.
Hey, Pat Forty's in on this. All right. I'm already rooting for the NCAA now. Your kids deserve it, not you. I'll root for Brooke and Mitchell and all that, but I'm not rooting for you to get a dollar. That'd be a travesty. Michigan had its spring football game. We're getting into spring football game season. Michigan won. They won the game. Who was it? Somebody, I got to look this up. Somebody.
They already had the game.
That's an early spring game.
Listen, they attacked the day with enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
When did they start? They start in February? They must have.
I don't know. I don't know if they ever had an off season. They just kept going.
Went right into it from bowl game to day one of spring.
Harbaugh was interviewing for jobs. Yeah.
Playoff, NCAA investigation, Harbaugh job season, spring. I mean, hit it all.
This is why he committed those violations. He could not wait. They've already played it. I don't know. Spring game. April 1st, they played the game, so I guess they're done. He had this quote, though. As we sit here on April 1, 2023, it's the best version of a Michigan football team that we've ever had. Oh, a great roster, players, tremendous coaches, all pulling in the same direction. Don't blame the media for hyping up the team there, old Jim. That doesn't mean we're not going to have a letdown as the months go on, but this is the best version of Michigan football I've seen since I've been here the last 8 years. So you can maybe couch it a little bit because there's a bunch of old Bo Schembechler. Now, Harbaugh was a old Bo Schembechler guy, too. But
why would he say that?
I mean, look, they got a lot of guys back. They've been 25-3. They are feeling themselves up there in Ann Arbor.
Obviously.
We can say that.
Yeah,
they got McCarthy back.
Expectations, right?
Yeah. Blake Corum, Donovan Edwards. There's a great backfield. The offensive line, they did that one more year fun. They got Zach Zinter, Trevor Keegan. They got Ladarius Henderson in from Arizona State in the line. They got Josiah Stewart from Nebraska. I'm from Coastal Carolina. They got Ernest Hausman from the portal. They got it all rolling. They haven't been recruiting. They started recruiting well. They just got Jaden Davis to commit 2024 quarterback from Charlotte. But, this is the Wolverines are fired up, Pat.
Yeah, that's interesting to sometimes coaches get excited and will say things that then they may want to wish they hadn't said or want to walk back a little bit, but I'm all for it here. And if I actually like when coaches tell the truth, if they think their team's going to be good. So, Michigan's been phenomenal for two straight seasons, but has flopped badly in the playoff. So there's still some work to do there. There's some proving to do that they can compete and possibly win a national championship. Winning the Big Ten is great. Beating Ohio State is great. But you got to show up in late December and win then, too.
Yeah, usually you don't see coaches say things like this. So surprised to hear it. And certainly it sets up, high expectations for the Wolverines. I'm just trying to still wrap my mind around a spring game in the first week of April. The Wolverines get stuff done, man. It's time to go to the beach now, huh?
Well, especially given the weather up there, man.
I know, right?
Start later.
Shirtless Harbaugh. I don't know. I don't know what. Don't talk beach with Harbaugh. We'll get him rip off his shirt again. I don't know. They had it. Here's Makari Page. I agree with what Harbaugh said. We all know who we are and what we can do this year. We all think about that one goal, the national championship. Our goal, of course, is to win the Big Ten, but that's kind of like expected of us now. Definitely not getting complacent is the big thing.
Wow.
The next step is to win a playoff game. I mean, the TCU loss, the more you look at it, it was bad at the time and it gets worse.
Yeah.
But, it kind of spared them the getting steamrolled by Georgia. So it's almost like, we blew that game, but then we didn't get humiliated. I don't know. I do think they'll be really good. I just still think there's like Ohio. Let's not just forget about Ohio State.
No kidding.
I know they're going to have a new quarterback, but they still have like 700 freaking top 100 recruits over there. I don't know.
Yeah, those quotes will reverberate around the Woody Hayes Athletic Complex in Columbus, Ohio, I would imagine. Yeah,
Penn State and Michigan. Mm-hmm. Pride comes before the fall, Mark D'Antonio once said. Yep. I mean, this is some serious Michigan rat poison.
It is.
Can you imagine Saban coming out and saying that?
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, this is the best team I've had since I've been here, says Nick Saban. Yeah. Sure, yeah.
I mean, originally said the best team ever.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah.
The best version of a Michigan football team that we've ever had. I guess you'd have to define weave. But, holy.
Of course, only been playing football since, like, the 1880s down up there.
So there's that. Ross, you visited down at Auburn, too. What's the story down there? Coach Freeze, how's he got it going here?
It's going. He's adjusting to, I think the biggest thing that stuck out at me is we obviously talked NIL, and he didn't have to. There wasn't a whole lot of NIL going on at Liberty. You know, just like most of Group of Fives, there's not a lot of significant NIL. It doesn't impact recruiting as much as in the higher level. And he jumped from somewhere that doesn't significantly mess with recruiting to the SEC. where it just means more, NIL. And I think he's adjusting to that new world of collectives and in the booster situation. You know, he's taking a step back offensively. I don't know how big of a step back he's really going to take, but he realizes, I think, because of the situation in college athletics, that it is more about being a CEO, managing a roster, recruiting, and, as he told me, quote, booster relationships that he needs to be more focusing on. So he's letting Philip Montgomery, the offensive coordinator, former Tulsa coach, and was a Baylor OC. He's kind of letting him do a lot this spring, and then they're going to reevaluate the play calling and how that will go in the fall. But he realizes it's really turned into a true business, and it's time to be CEO, Hugh, instead of just the offensive guru.
Interesting. I know Hugh Freeze's opinions on paying for services.
We didn't get into that, Dan.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about. No, it's so he's managing. So this is the thing you got to do, though, right? You got to check and see who's going to align your forces, right? Is that what he's? I don't know. What did all that mean?
Hey, well, alignment's the big buzzword in
it is.
College sports, especially football, and that means yes, that we've got 9 million staff people all working to make my team better, and the president of the school is down with it, and the AD is down with it, and the boosters in the collective are down with it. That's your alignment. So,
yep,
it's a lot to align for a head coach these days.
There's alignment has been an issue at Auburn. Stability has been a problem lately. They've got a new president. He was hired, I think, last spring. And then, of course, that kind of set up all the other changes, right? Then the new president basically did not extend the contract of Alan Green, the athletic director. So off he went. He kind of stepped down. They mutually agreed. And he was replaced by John Cohen, Mississippi State AD, went to Auburn. And then, of course, they made the coaching change, hiring Hugh Freeze and firing Brian Harsin. You know, through the course of that story, I was compiling the buyout figures that Auburn had paid its coaching staffs the last 3 years or so. Much of the buyout they're still on the hook for. And I think it's really close to $50, $55 million. It's just absurd. And that just speaks to certainly a lack of alignment and stability in poor decision makings when it comes to negotiating deals as well.
Hey, Auburn is the industry leader in just throwing money at desperate attempts to win in football. So this is part of what comes with it. Yeah, we're just gonna burn $55 million in search of somebody who can beat Alabama.
Well, Gus Malzahn thinks they found him. So, you know, I wanted that story to be a little deeper, but we kind of had a rush to put it up. So the only one I called outside of interviewing Hugh was Gus, and knowing they're really good friends. And, you know, he thinks that Hugh Freeze will challenge Nick Saban. The fact, you know, he pointed to the fact that he's already beat him twice. And I think there's only three active coaches who have beat Nick Saban multiple times. And it's Gus Malzahn, Dabo Sweeney, and Hugh Freeze.
A number of listeners alerted us to the story of a train derailment in Montana, which I think has produced what should be the Pulitzer Prize winning photo of the year.
Oh, I see it. Oh, my goodness.
So the train was full of Coors Light and Blue Moon beer. And the train tipped over came off the tracks and part of it rolled down this embankment into a river. And there are cases of beer everywhere. Yeah. And there's a photo in the Missoulian, I guess Missoula, Montana newspaper by Ben Allen Smith of this fisherman on a rowboat. They're calling him a fisherman. I don't think he's drunk with a rowboat. and he rowed his boat up to where the derailment was and loaded this boat, which weirdly has a handicap symbol on it. And filled up his boat, and he's now, and in the picture, he's rowing away from this mountain of crashed up beer, holding has he got the Coors Light? What does he got there?
Yeah, he's got, it looks like he's got a 12 or something of Coors
Light.
Yeah,
he's got some beers in his boat, and so there's just free beer floating down the river. And this guy has got, he's loaded up, he's got this huge smile.
Amazing.
This photo's just phenomenal. I had to check like five different places to make sure it's real, because you cannot believe it's like this guy's like rowing his boat. Nothing happens here. The Clark Fork River. All of a sudden the train derails and this guy's got beer for like the next 5 years floating in.
Yeah. The delivery from the gods, right? The beer gods just said, here. All the free beer you can possibly handle in your little rowboat.
I mean,
handicapped rowboat.
This has to win a Pulitzer, right? I mean, look
it
at this.
It does, right?
This is amazing. Just a mountain of beer in the back. It looks like a landslide of beer. Wow.
And he's got a handicapped boat? Yeah. I didn't even know. Like a handicapped rowboat.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is with that. I see that. That's interesting, too.
It's got the wheelchair symbol. I don't know.
Yeah.
25 car derailment through a century old tunnel. I don't know. There it is. Those pictures. It looks a beaut, man. Montana's beautiful. Even better with ice cold Coors Lights floating down the.
Because you know that river's cold. Right there. Like, oh.
Yeah. They're like chilling. It's not even hot, right? It's like.
Yeah.
River runs through it. This photo is one of the. This is one of the greatest photos I've ever seen.
Iconic.
A group of fishermen claim a bottle of beer from a derailment on the banks of. I think there's. Is there more than one guy in that?
Yeah,
it only looks like one guy to me.
Oh no, there is another guy. The guy with the rainbow.
Somebody sitting down, I think.
One thing about podcasting I've learned: it's good to describe a photo. That's really a good use of the medium.
Everybody looks like.
Come on, man. Anyway, when you're not driving, when you get a chance, get your ass to the Clark Fork River, man. Because down the bottom, there's going to be some blue moons.
Yeah, like
Pat and I would be happy. He could have his IPA. He could have my Coors Lights.
See? Yeah, no, the boat ramp should be just like packed with guys getting their boats into the water to go make a beer run there.
And finally, I came across this story. And, it has nothing to do with anything, but I just was excited about it. Remember Mike Tyson at his peak? He had so much money, he bought pet tigers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Seems like a somehow wise investment.
Yeah. He went on a podcast and discussed his tiger era. on the Hot Boxing podcast. So they asked him, how did you get the tigers? He had three tigers. He bought them when they were little cubs, I guess. He thought it was a good idea. He said, quote, black market. This guy was selling them and said, I can get a full grown one for $70,000 or I can get a small one for like $50,000. $50,000 for a tiger. Well, of course, the black market. But when... Even then, how do you find customers? I guess you just wander around looking for Mike Tyson. Because who's buying this? So, I want to know more about the black market tiger business. That's really what I'm getting at here. I don't even know what this segment is. I just found this story to be incredibly entertaining.
Yes, how does Tyson one advertise?
So I got the baby. I mean, of course, right? So why pay 70 when you can pay 50?
There you go.
I get the baby. We feed the baby with a bottle, and then eventually she's 400 pounds. And then you figure out, how do I get rid of this mother? I can listen to Mike Tyson stories all day long.
Well, especially the voice.
You got to think of that ahead of time, Mike.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
He was asked if the Tigers were ever aggressive. Not to me, never to me. Hell no. Tigers respected. Do you think Mike Tyson could knock out a Tiger?
No.
Nah, I don't think so either.
No, that's one. A full grown, the baby? Okay. But no, when they get full grown, which, yes, he might have should have seen coming that they would eventually grow up.
400 pounds, though.
Yeah.
Like, 400 it's pounds big.
Would kill him.
Yeah, but if he got the first shot in, right on the jaw.
Mike Tyson versus pet Tiger. I'm still taking the Tiger. Sorry.
I think Tiger would win every single battle against human ever, except this would be our one shot. That's our one shot. Man, we're sending Mike Tiger. Tyson. If we have Mike Tyson, the Tiger's like coming humanity. At him with like jumping, and he punches the Tiger. Right, perfect shot. You got a one chance.
Well, then the Tiger says, okay, that hurt. Now I'm going to eat you.
Well, yeah, you'd have to really not. Yeah, you'd have to run away. I don't know.
I can't help anyway, but think of the Hangover. As long as you can, what is it? He wraps the pill in and he gives it to the Tiger and the Tiger passes out and sleeps.
Yeah.
He wraps it in a steak, like raw meat, and they're trying to season it up. And he's just, do Tigers like pepper?
No, that's right. So they asked how he got rid of the Tiger. I had to get rid of her when her eyes and her head got bad. He had her for 16 years, the Tigers.
Wow.
Oh, incredible. And she ripped somebody's arm off. He just adds that.
There you go. Let's bury the lead.
Oh, my God.
The rumor was a Tiger had jumped over the fence at his property and attacked his neighbor, but he says that's not true. No, that's not what happened. Somebody jumped over my fence where the Tiger was and jumped in their habitat and started playing with the Tiger. And the Tiger didn't know the lady, so it was a bad accident.
She jumped in the property. Decision.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah, who jumped jumps the property into, tiger? I mean, yeah, who jumps into a cage with a tiger that you...
Just imagine what was happening in like the 1980s and 90s with Mike Tyson's house.
Yeah, that's true.
Like everything's believable.
Yeah, that's true.
She tried to sue me until we found out she jumped over the fence and she trespassed the tiger. And listen, when I saw what the Tiger did to her hand, I had a lot of money back then, so I gave her $250,000 or whatever it was because she was just effed up. That's how he explains the...
Oh, dear.
I don't know. I have no purpose for the story.
I was about to say, thank you for bringing this up, huh?
I've ever heard a Tiger story.
Well...
Imagine being Mike Tyson's accountant or something back then, or like his lawyer. Oh. Just like, what? Wait, what'd you do? I bought three Tigers. What, one wasn't enough?
Yeah.
Just a baby.
Yeah. No, I've heard some great stories from like financial guys who did money for unwise professional athletes. Some epic spending and wasting of money.
Got anything that can rival Mike Tyson?
Well... Let's see if I can tell this in the right way. Somebody who was managing money for a basketball player who kept fathering children and said,
That's gonna be expensive.
He said, I have a surefire way for you to save $500,000 a year. Guy says, what?
Oh. There you go.
I did know a financial planner who told me a story of a... Oh, go ahead. You got more? Or did he do
it? No. That's enough.
Okay. I had one where a guy said the guy had horrible credit because he kept going... So he had like a $50 million contract, but every time he'd go to like a store, he'd go to like Best Buy or something, and they'd say, you want to apply for the card and we'll give you 10% off. And so the player thought he was doing a good thing by saving 10%, but then he would forget that he had the card. So he somehow had like a $40 million contract and a credit report of like 113 or something. They had like tremendous. He had like 17 open credit cards out there.
Beautiful.
I don't know. Anyway, that's what I got. All right, we got anything else? Any other details?
Well, just we'll be back later. Tell in the us week. About your tell us about your surroundings where you're doing the podcast.
I am broadcasting live from Augusta National Golf Club. What other college football podcast broadcasts live from Augusta?
In their own like private podcasting room, right?
We have a podcast room that is everything. Ross was here last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The press center at Augusta National is so far and away the finest press center of all in all of the world. There's no comparison, right, Ross? I mean,
no comparison at all. It's absurd. It's just, it's the wildest, nicest. It's kind of mind blowing how incredible that the facility is for media.
99% of golf clubs, private clubs in the world, would take the press center as their clubhouse.
Yeah.
That's how nice it is.
That's, so, yeah, I mean, so, you got Jordan Spieth, Arnold Palmer, Ben Crenshaw behind you. You know,
yeah.
They'll give you some pimento cheese,
great,
I'm sure.
Great down here, yeah. Pimento cheese. Tiger just walked by. He and I were at Perkins earlier having some breakfast. No, I mean, it's fantastic. No. Speaking of Tigers. Anyway. Yeah. Masters is here. Can't beat it. All right. This pod's got to end. I don't even know why I told the Mike Tyson story. I just want to do it. Now you know. We'll be back later in the week. More spring football talk and whatever else happens. We'll see if women's basketball gets a little salty again. We like it. Get salty. Keep subscribing. Share us on social media. Appreciate everyone listening. Talk to you later.